Thank you so much again for tuning into Wove Inspiration Podcast. This is episode 4. So what does true love look like? Is it a feeling or is it something more? My guest, Kim Sorrell, is considered an expert on the subject of love, having written 2 books, the first entitled Cry Until You Laugh, about her and her husband's battle with cancer after being diagnosed just 4 months apart, and the second book entitled Love Is, chronicles her year-long quest to figure out the true meaning of love during her life-changing experience in Haiti. So stay tuned. Kim, we are going to be talking about love because you are the expert. So tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Yeah. So I have been in business for years. I'm an entrepreneur and started my first business right out of high school. But my real passion is what I'm doing now. I've written a couple books and I'm speaking and just trying to share the love of Jesus and trying to share love, what real love is. And so that is my mission.
Awesome. So let's talk about your books. Your first book is entitled Cry Until You Laugh, and it is about you and your husband's battle with cancer after being diagnosed just 4 months apart. So tell us a little bit more about that experience for you.
Yeah, it was nuts. I was diagnosed with breast cancer on the phone on a Friday afternoon phone call. It wasn't a Lifetime movie moment where we were sitting across the desk from the doctor holding each other, you know, whatever that moment that you see on TV all the time in the movies. It was a Friday afternoon phone call, blah, blah, you've got cancer. We'll call you on Tuesday. And oh my word, it rocked my world. I called my husband. He came home immediately and did exactly the right thing, by the way. If anybody's wondering, what do you do in that particular moment? He did exactly the right thing. He just held me. He just held me. And we just stood together holding each other and crying and just holding each other and loving on each other. And that was perfect. But so I went to the bookstore the next day and everything seemed to be depressing or real medical. And I wanted to know what it felt like. I wanted to know, what is this journey, this breast cancer thing? I didn't know anyone who had had breast cancer. I was young. I was 47, just had turned 47, and too young for this stuff, I figured. And so kind of went kicking and screaming in the first place to get a mammogram. But I didn't know what it was going to feel like, what I was going to deal with. Were there questions I had to answer, choices to make, whatever? So I started writing. Because I figured someday somebody's going to want to know what this feels like, you know, what it's like. And so I started writing and I would send out my writings in as sort of updates and emails. And before I knew it, 5,000 people were reading what I was writing because it was so much more than what I was going through, because it was what I was going through personally, emotionally, spiritually, on every level. I'm pretty straightforward. There aren't a whole lot of secrets in my life or any secrets probably in my life. And so that's what I did. And then my husband started having stomach pain shortly after I was diagnosed and went to the doctor. He was told to take some Tums, you know, probably just a nervous stomach because of my cancer. Went again to the doctor, finally went again and found out that he had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, wow.
Horrible diagnosis. Yeah. Just 4 months into my getting through it all. And then he passed away 6 weeks after that.
Oh my gosh.
I was still writing. Yeah. It was an interesting time because I don't know anyone who's been through that thing. You know, it's like you meet people who have been through the same thing as you, right? Like my gosh, you've been through so much. You've been through so much in your life. Some of what you've been through, we have in common. And some of what you've been through, I thank God that I haven't been through it. And praise God that you've gotten through it and that you're stronger probably because of it and that you are sharing with the world.
But
I don't know anybody who, you know, got that cancer double whammy and then lost the love of their life. And so it was a real weird time. But my book, I was writing still when my husband was diagnosed and when I lost him, and I was still going through my stuff. And so I wrote for about a year. And the book is called Cry Until You Laugh. It's real pain, real love, real funny, because you have to cry. I mean, you're going to cry, right?
Yeah.
But you also need permission to laugh again. Mm-hmm. It's okay to laugh again.
Wow. So
cry until you laugh.
Yeah. How long were you guys married?
A month shy of 29 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. So that is a lifetime of love that was built between you guys. And then all of a sudden you first are diagnosed with cancer, and then your husband's diagnosed with cancer and it passes away. So how were you even able to write the book during all of this, in this period of time?
Well, it was pretty therapeutic, really. The writing was helping me more than anything. And at the time, I really didn't necessarily know if it would ever be a book or think about it that way. I just knew I needed to write. And my husband was the most faithful man I know. When I met him, he was chasing God, and he never stopped chasing God. He was always wanting more. He was that guy who got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and was on his face before God, reading the Bible, reading a devotional book. He was just true blue, just such a wonderful man, just an incredible man. He taught me so much. We learned so much together. You know, I was 18, he was 22. So he was old enough to buy beer, I guess, but we were pretty young. And so, you know, against all odds, kind of, right? You know, people tell you, don't get married at that age. Well, I was head over heels. I met him. And it's kind of funny because I was going to be the first woman president. That was my goal when I was in high school. So I had my life laid out before me. And I didn't think a man and kids would fit into the equation. I didn't think it would work. But I knew that if I ever met somebody, he had to have two things. He had to be over 6 foot tall, because my 5 foot nothing mom married a short man, and I wanted my kids to have a fighting chance at some height. And he needed to be good looking, because yeah, I wanted him to look good in my wedding pictures. So I was obviously very deep thinker. And so 10 days after I met him, May of my senior year in high school, I asked him to marry me, and he said yes. And we got married a little less than a year later and started having babies a couple years after that. And I felt like we dated for 29 years. You know, I would still get butterflies in my stomach when I saw him, and, you know, just look at him in awe sometimes. He just was such a wonderful guy. And the love that you develop, I mean, you were married for 18 years.
Yeah.
That's some love that you develop in 18 years.
Right.
Through tough times, through good times, the highs, the lows, the ins, the outs, the everything. Mm-hmm. It just grows and blossoms, and you just have that place in your heart that nothing can fill. Nothing can fill but him.
Yeah, exactly. So you've just described what true love is. True love is there are going to be ups and downs, but regardless of everything that is going on in your world between you and your spouse, in your relationships, you find a way to be able to go forward and work together as a team. That's love. The world's definition of love is completely different. It's more of the Eros type love. But how would you describe, from a spiritual standpoint, what love is?
You know, it's such a big question, right? Because there seems to be this mystery around love. Like so many people, you ask 10 people, they probably have 10 different definitions. And what they see love is, how they see love is, whatever. And And losing my husband made me question love, what love really is. And was I doing it right? Was I living it right? You know, I wanted to live the rest of my life to honor him because he was great. And we were supposed to be together till we were 95 years old on the front porch, you know, in rockers, drinking lemonade, smiling at each other, whatever 95 year old people do on the front porch. And so I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. And so I dedicated a full year to figuring out what love really is. And I'll tell you, I have a hard time going to a restaurant and committing to an entree. So committing a full year to something was a big step for me. but I did it. And I found out some things about love, like what you just talked about love. There are some myths, some things that I think that we're taught about love, that you hear about love, that really are not love at all.
Truth.
And so dispelling some of those myths, I think, is an important thing. And what you just talked about, how about you get through the highs and the lows, you know, you get through it all as a team, you work through it together. Absolutely. But one of the key components of that, the way I see it, is that there's the person and you love the person. You love the person, right? So you fall in love with somebody. And of course, we're talking love for a child, love for a neighbor, love for somebody in the grocery store, you know, right. Love for everybody. Right? But you love the person for who God created them to be. You know, you love the person. And you're so in love and you walk down the aisle and you say, I do. And you can't wait to spend the rest of your life together. And then he leaves his dirty underwear on the bedroom floor. And you're going, what the heck did I do? Why did I say yes to this guy? What was I thinking? Well, he's not the leaving the underwear. That's something he did. That's something he did. That's not who he is.
Right.
You fell in love with who he is. So your love should not be taken away for something he does that's like that. And so often in a relationship, the downs, the moments that we argue, the moments that we disagree, you know, the moments that, you know, you're whatever, all you can think about is this bad morning breath and nothing else.
Right.
Those moments, getting through those moments, keep in mind, he's not bad morning breath. That's not who he is. And you love who he is. You love who she is. You love who they are, not the things they do. It's mm-hmm. It's not about the things they do. There's a separation there.
Right.
So, right. And so that's why you can get through the times that you disagree things and whatever, find fault in each other or whatever it is that we do, crazy things that we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one of the things I really like what you said earlier about your husband is that he woke up early in the morning and he spent time with God. And so to me, that sounds as though he had this love relationship with God first before anything. So how did he display that? Not only in your life, but in other people's lives.
Oh, my word. In so many ways. In so many ways. We had businesses. So he had staff. And he was the greatest boss. Everybody loved him. People worked for him for years and years and years because they loved him. I still hear from people. It's been 14 years since I lost him. And I still hear from people. Every time I see anybody who knew Steve, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, we still miss Steve. He's such a great guy. And he was just this great guy. And it's kind of funny. We did everything together. I mean, I started the businesses. He really worked for me, but it worked, you know, no egos got in the way. I didn't care. He didn't care. I mean, it wasn't, you know, that kind of a relationship. I mean, it shouldn't be anyway, employee to staff. I mean, we're all equal. You know, we're all created in his image. We're all the same. We're all on the same earth. We all walk the same earth. And so, but he was, I coached varsity girls volleyball for 17 years. I coached basketball for 25 years. And he did not play sports in school, but he learned. And he assisted me. He was my assistant coach. And he was great. And he would help the team, he'd help with, you know, whatever workouts and all kinds of stuff. So he just gave of himself everywhere. He was never looking ever for what is it, what's in it for him. That was never a thing. It was just always love pouring out, which that's another one of the myths about love.
Yeah.
Is that we hear it's a two-way street, right? Mm-hmm. You hear that it's a two-way street. Or people put a number to it. It's got to be 50-50. It's got to be 100-100, you know? Well, you know, if I give you money and you give me a pair of jeans, that's a transaction. Love's not a transaction. Right. I'm giving you love to get love in return. That's not love. That's a transaction. Love is not a transaction. Love, you love, period. Love is 100% on you. Whether it comes back to you or not, it's 100% on you. Yeah. You don't control anybody but yourself. And as soon as you realize that, that you don't have control and all we have to do is love, my gosh, the freedom that is in that is incredible. It is the most freeing way to live is to just love everybody with no expectations of getting anything in return, but just love. And not the, yeah, I love everybody, but those darn Democrats or I love everybody, but those Republicans, yeah. You know, or whatever label we put on people, right? No, you love everybody and recognize that people are people all over the world. We are all masterpieces. We are all, you know, I think about like the Mona Lisa went up for sale. I don't even know how many millions and millions and millions of dollars, mm-hmm. right? That someone would pay for it. It's because it's a one of a kind masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And so are you a one of a kind masterpiece. There's never one, anybody exactly like you. There's never been anyone who ever will be exactly like you ever in the future, ever in the past. Nobody's walked in your shoes your whole life. You are a one of a kind masterpiece created in his image.
Yeah.
Created to be exactly who he created you to be. And so love would say, I get to live who I believe I'm created to be. And so do you.
Mm-hmm.
I might not agree with everything you have to say. I might not like some of the stuff. I might not like you. You know, you might not be someone I want to go have coffee with all the time right. or hang out with. That's okay. That's all right. But love gives everyone the freedom to be who they believe they're created to be and recognizing the beauty in our differences and the beauty in our uniqueness.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I read about you is that there is, if we had love, if people implemented everything that you just described in this world, that the world would be completely different. But let's be real. Unfortunately, people and also in the church don't grasp that. And I mean, why do you think that is? I know that we come from different backgrounds, different experiences and everything, but why is it that we can't really get that concept of true godly love, even in the church?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is we have been taught things about love that are not love, that we don't have a full understanding of love, that some of the things done in the name of love, said in the name of love. I mean, look how much hurt is done yeah. in the name of love. A lot of things done and said in the name of love are absolutely not love, are absolutely not love. And when you love, when you truly love, when you truly understand what it is and that it is who you are, you know, it's not a feeling like fear. Like you watch a scary movie, you go to bed that night and you hear every creak, every bump, every everything, right? And you're afraid. You don't yes. live in fear. Praise the Lord, we don't live in fear.
Right.
But we live in love. We live in love. We never hang up love at the door, right? Love doesn't go away. We live in it. Love is who you are. God is love. The Bible doesn't say God loves. It says God is love.
Yeah.
You are created in God's image. Therefore, you are love. How you decide to live that love is up to you, but you are love. So it's walking, talking, living, breathing, giving. It's everything. And when you recognize first figuring out what real love is, but then realizing that it's your only job. It's your only job. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to do. I mean, way back in Leviticus, in between, I don't know, you know, sleep in a tent when you know, that time of the month and don't eat hooked right. animals, you know, whatever. It says, love everybody. It tells us to love everybody. Jesus wasn't making that up. That wasn't a new concept when Jesus came. That was from the beginning. Mm-hmm. That was from the beginning. So loving everybody is something we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, interpret it how you want, but that's what we're supposed to do. And when you do love everybody the way you're supposed to love, it's, you don't judge. There's no room for judgment. I mean, because judgment's not our job. Praise yeah. the Lord. Can you imagine? I am so happy that there's not going to be a line in front of me and I'm going to go, you're in, you're out. You know, I'm so glad that's not my job. My job is to love. My job is to love. And if you think about people that you want to be around, if you think about the people you want to spend the most time with, how do they love? How do they show love?
Yeah.
You know, there's something very attractive about love, right? Something very appealing. You want to be with people who really, truly love, who aren't fake about it, but understand it and live it. Don't just talk about it.
Exactly.
But really do it.
Yeah. And a lot of times people, because they, if they don't have a relationship with God, they, that's where the confusion lies, because of the fact that if they knew God, and because God is love, they would know how to love or learn to love, know how to love through reading his word. And I know that you have, is it a study plan on, in regards to 1 Corinthians 13 that would help a whole lot of folks if they to really get an understanding of what love truly is?
Yeah, well, what I did is that year that I dedicated to search for the true meaning of love, most of the year I was in Haiti. So that was interesting all by itself. But I decided I would take 1 Corinthians 13 and work on one word a month. You know, love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, etc. So very first month, love is patient. And then I would work on each one for an entire month. The first thing I figured out is that there are 14 is's and isn'ts of love in that chapter. Yeah. And so it took me a little bit longer than a year doing them all for a whole month. But the things that I found out are things that I have never been told, I have never read, I've never seen before, but are absolutely the truth about love. And each month, my word, it's like I had to be hit over the head at the end of the month. I would be searching, love is patient, looking for it everywhere, trying to figure it out. And then something would happen that would just, it's like God would go, Kim, wake up. I've been trying to tell you all month long. So now I'm going to have you chased by a motorcycle gang because now you're going to learn what this means. You know, wow. I'm going to make you sleep outside with the snakes and tarantulas because now you're going to learn. So crazy stuff happened and crazy revelations came. I mean, just it's incredible.
Yeah.
The truth about love.
Wow. What suggestions can you offer someone who struggles with love? It could be a daughter that hasn't seen her father in years. And now he tries to, you know, he wants to restore a relationship. And it's like, I don't know if I can do that because you haven't been in my life all this time. Or just relationships in general that people find it really hard to want to love the other person because they're not doing the things that they feel like they should be doing for them. How do people love?
Well, you know, one thing I would say about that is sometimes love to really love means to walk away. You need to walk away. If you're being abused, if you're being verbally abused, physically abused in any way, if you stay in the situation, you're enabling that person to continue that life. And that life's not going to lead them very far, yeah. right? That's not a happy life. They're not happy doing it. And you're not happy being on the receiving end of it. And by staying, you're enabling the behavior, the bad behavior, to continue. So the most loving thing you can do sometimes is walk away. That's real love, because it can be very difficult to walk away, because you have to be brave. Yeah. You got to be strong. You got to say, I'm going to figure out my life all over again. Right. So, but sometimes that's what love would say to do. And sometimes in relationships, there can be relationships that are toxic. Absolutely. I mean, there are people that don't know how to love, don't know how to receive love, don't know how to give love, that make it very difficult to be in relationship with.
Yeah.
But you know, you talked about like being out of a relationship for years and then going back in. You know, I think it's so individual. It's so individual. And I would never judge how anybody does or doesn't do that. I can say, though, that I am a different person at my age than I was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. than I was 20 years ago, than I was 30 years ago. And I appreciate so much people who have given me grace and mercy and let me evolve into who I am today. And hopefully, you know, my next decade will be better and better, you know, hopefully things will just get better. But I'm so happy that I get to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we want to give ourselves that grace to change, we need to give some grace to other people and see if they've changed.
Right.
See if it can be an open door. And if not, that's okay. You can love people from afar. They don't have to be in your living room to love them. You can love them from afar. You know, loving them and needing to be with them are two different things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes, you know, it does take longevity and maturity for people to get to the point where they're able to love people where they are, despite whatever things that they may have done to the individual. Maturity in God and in your relationship with Jesus Christ definitely makes a difference. And then you actually, the closer that you become to God and everything in your relationship and studying His word and everything, there is the ability to start seeing people through His eyes, as opposed to the way that we flesh see people. And that's how it makes it a lot easier for us to really love people, because we're seeing people through God's eyes, who is love.
Oh, I love that. I love that you just said that. I love that. I pray in the morning, Jesus, God, Lord, please let me see people the way that you see people. Yeah. Let me see people through your eyes. You know, we live in such a visual world, right? You know, we're on our phones. We're looking at our phones. We're looking at tablets. We're looking at a screen. We're looking at whatever, you know, such a visual world and taking in things visually. And, you know, one of the hardest ones for me was Love Keeps No Record of Wrongs. And kind of what you're talking about too, right? And I kind of dreaded that month, because I thought, well, you might forgive people, but you don't forget the things that happened to you.
Truth.
Right? So what could love that doesn't keep record of wrongs even mean? Like I just didn't know what that could even mean, and figured it's going to be tough to figure out. And that month was crazy.
I'm sure.
It was nuts. Yeah. I was asked by a man from the U.S. to show him a water project that I was working on in Haiti. And I was, all about it, because they might want to get involved, get their churches involved. And so 8 men came over from the U.S. and then 2 of my Haitian friends went along, also men, went along to translate. And they knew the water project inside and out, because they've been working on it for so long. And we get out to the countryside to where we're staying. And it's this little building with 2 rooms, and each room has 4 twin size beds, 8 American men, 2 Haitian men, and me. But we brought 2 cots and an air mattress. And I'm thinking, we can move stuff around. We'll be fine. No big deal. You know, it's Haiti. It's hot. You only go in there to sleep. It's not like you go hang in the bedroom, play cards or anything else. You just sleep in there. It's so hot.
Yeah.
So we're looking, and then the head guy of the Americans called me over. Kim, can I talk to you? I'm like, sure. And he said, did you see the rooms? And I'm thinking, buddy, there is nothing else to see. And then I thought, oh, he's asking me because he's going to think I want my own room. So I'll just say, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he'll say, oh, well, no, if anyone should sleep inside, it should be you. And I'll say, well, I don't care if there's other people in my room. And he'll say, good, good, because there's only so much space. So I said, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he said, oh, good, good. Because we've got men on this trip that would not want a woman in their room. And I went, oh, my word, did I just put my foot in my mouth? What am I going to do? Because there are tarantulas and there are snakes and there are chupacabras or I don't know, whatever.
Oh, my goodness.
In the bushes of Haiti, right? So to sleep outside, I did not treasure that idea, I have to say. So I looked around. I had to figure it out. We did have an air mattress. It was a piece of plywood being held up by these little wooden structures. I thought, well, if I'm under there, at least if it rains, I won't get wet. So the first night I went to bed and I'm just praying, Lord, please, please, please don't let anything bite me, you know, maim me in any way. Please protect me, you know, whatever. Yeah. And my air mattress held air for about an hour. And then I'm laying on gravel. And it was so loud because dogs were barking and horns were honking. And finally that died down sometime after midnight. Then like 2 a.m. voodoo drums started in the distance. And then that went for a couple hours. Then finally, I was able to doze off and get some sleep. First night came and went. Everything was fine. Praise the Lord. Second night, same thing. I'm laying on gravel, the dogs, the horns, the voodoo drums. Finally, I'm asleep. But I woke up because there was something on my leg. And I was scared to death. I was thinking, does Haiti have the anti-venom to whatever it is that is about to bite me? Are they going to be able to airlift me in time to save my leg, to get to Miami? You know, what is going to happen? And so I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes and it was a chicken. There was a chicken on my leg. I shooed it away and I didn't know whether to be mad because it woke me up from the little bit of sleep I was getting or happy because it wasn't something way, way worse than a chicken. So third night came and went, nothing. Fourth night, same thing, the gravel, the dogs, the horns, the voodoo drums, finally asleep. But again, I woke up because again, there was something on my leg. And again, I was so afraid. And again, I slowly lifted my head and slowly opened my eyes. And again, it was that dang chicken. And again, I didn't know whether to be happy or mad. But that night, we had chicken for dinner. So the fifth night came and went without incident. All was well. And, you know, I got to say, at first, I was bitter. I was mad at these guys. I thought, man, I'm all about equality, but this isn't equality. This is, Kim, you are less than, so you're sleeping outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought, gosh, I hope my sons wouldn't treat a woman like that, you know, or another human being like that. Like, what was that about? Right? Not one of them stepping up to say, hey, wait a minute. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first I was bitter, and then I thought, you know, bitterness only hurts me. I mean, we all know that, you know, bitterness eats away at you, and no one should ever live in bitterness. It's a horrible place to live. And so I didn't want to be bitter. And then I went, I finally get it. Love keeps no record of wrongs. I finally understood it. Love that keeps no record of wrongs just changes the narrative. It changes the tone of the story. So instead of these rotten men that did this rotten thing to me, it's, you know, it's just kind of a funny story that I lived through. I could now literally sleep anywhere in the world and be perfectly comfortable.
Right.
And all is well. Right. So that's what love does, because we pick the tone. We choose the tone. Other people don't get the opportunity to, they don't have control over our tone. They don't get to decide how we take something. That's up to us.
Yeah.
That's up to us. You know, two people can be in the same traffic jam. First guy honking his horn, stomping his foot, yelling out the door, his blood pressure's going up, he's mad, his face is turning red. In the car right next to him, guy in the same traffic jam.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going, you know, whoa, this is really cool podcast. I'm just going to turn that on and just chill and listen to that. And his blood pressure maybe lowers, you know. same situation, yeah. Two different reactions. We pick, we choose. So love that keeps no record of wrongs doesn't read into stuff or doesn't make everything bad or anything bad.
Yeah.
You know, we get to pick the narrative. And so that's what that means.
Amen. Kim, how can people get in contact with you to purchase both of your books, Cry Until You Laugh and also Love Is? How can people reach you?
Yeah, I am literally the only Kim Sorrell spelled my way in the entire world because my last name is obnoxious. It has way too many letters, two R's, two E's, two L's, S-O-R-R-E-L-L-E. But KimSorrell.com is my website. I have lots of resources there. I've got a free 14-day love challenge. And if you sign up for the love challenge, and it's easy. It's just you read something and something to think about every day for 14 days. If you commit to it and you sign up for it on my website, I will send you for free a WWLD, What Would Love Do, wristband. Because if you can answer anything that way, you're answering the right way.
Nice.
But Love Is and Cry Until You Laugh, they're available everywhere. They're available on Amazon, on all online booksellers. Love Is in bookstores now because it's my latest book. So it's in Barnes & Noble and different places. But yeah, KimSorrell.com and Love Is, Cry Until You Laugh.
Awesome.
And I love hearing from people. So please reach out.
Yeah, yeah. Kim, it has been a blessing to have you on my show. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on Wove Inspiration.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure for me. I love your podcast. I know you're a little under the weather. You're fantastic under the weather. So not under the weather, you're even more amazing. So thank you for this opportunity. I'm so happy we're connected.
Thank you so much. Hey, you guys, this is Althea with Wove Inspiration Podcast. You guys have an awesome day. Take care. God bless. Hey, thank you so much for tuning in to Wove Inspiration Podcast. Wove features men and women who use their voice to share their story of overcoming obstacles in life. You can follow us and leave a comment on either Facebook or Instagram under Wove Inspiration. You can also subscribe to the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts.